Okay. Thank you, Paul. So I think we have a very nice workshop here. Thanks for the organizers. Because for me, it covers a broad spectrum of topics. On one hand, we have Dirac equation for molecules, then we consider their collision properties, how to cool them, spectroscopy, collective behavior of these molecule gases. And today, what I'm going to talk about is going to be the other end of the spectrum. Are we talking about polar fermions, dipolar fermions on an optical lattice? Okay? So problem is the following for us. Okay? So suppose we can make quantum degenerate dipolar gas, right? And suppose we can lower the amount of optical lattice, and suppose we can even cool them to a lower temperature. By the way, none of this is that easy. That's probably why we are here. But suppose we can do that. So what do we see? What do fermions do? Okay, we're talking about the dipole fermions. What are kind of the phases they organize into? Okay? And the question I'm interested, for example, is the following. Are they arboreal? Okay? In the sense that we already know, for example, for electrons in solids, okay, if the, all the phases we're going to see are boring, that's less fun for us. But if you look at the picture and think about for a little moment, I think most people here will agree with me that it's not going to be boring. We're going to see something new. Okay? And the reason for that is this dipole-dipole interaction is really special. It's not what we commonly see, for example, in solids or fermion systems. So I will focus on the situation that we have an electric field, external electric field, that aligns all the dipoles in the, say, the z direction, okay? And everybody here is familiar with this form. So dipole dipole interaction is long range, 1 over r cubed, okay? Scale is d squared, but also it's anisotropic. So, and this is two elementary facts we know. And it turns out these facts will be very, very important for the talk later on. So I'll just reiterate it, because everybody knows, okay? Think of these as tiny magnets, south pole, north pole. So if we have this head-to-tail configuration, they attract two dipoles. If the head-to-head, tail-to-tail, they repel. Okay. If you put this many-body system, a bunch of dipoles interacting, in a broader picture, so and compare to all other known Fermi systems, for example, the 2D electron gas, there we have a long-range interaction, 1 over r, okay, Coulomb repulsion. And what are kind of typical phases we get? We get Fermi liquid. But if you crank up the interaction too much, there's a density, electron density modulation, known as Wigner crystal. And how about the alkali gas two components? Spin up and down, we have attractive contact interaction. This is the object of long range. Well, we have S-wave superfluid. That's a lot of, we have a lot of experts here. For example, the phenomenon of BCS-BC crossover. Okay, in the optical lattice context, we have a Fermi-Hubbard model. Okay, and here we have on-site repulsive interaction. It's almost like contact interaction. What do we get? Well, in that case, we know event is ferromagnetic. Okay. And suppose we dope it away from half-filling, and this is a punitive, but theoretical evidence suggests still we will see D-wave superfluid. Okay? Now, how about a bunch of fermions interacting with dipole-dipole induction? And these dipole inductions are dominant. What do I get?
Excuse me, why the on-site interaction is repulsive?
Oh, I choose
it's a one-dimensional electric site, then yes, dipoles like that repel each other.
But no, this is not dipole. Then I'm talking about alkali, it's not dipole. Alkali atoms.
Okay.
Okay, sorry for the confusion. This So now the topic of today is what happens on the last row, okay? Well, this problem is not new, and a lot of very good people have worked on that. They, studied a lot, and here we just randomly quote two results from more than 10 years ago, and early works on the superfluidity of dipolar fermions. So here's a list, the laundry list of the hot candidate phases. I would like you to compare this list to what you have over here. Well, what do we have? Something like this. We have a Fermi liquid, but it's anisotropic just because the dipole induction is, directionally depending on the directions. Also, we have some charged density well, just kind of the analog within a crystal. We have the P wave superfluid. It's not S wave, P wave, and these early works, pioneer works, actually, set the case there will be the P wave. And there are on the spec, are some discussions that there might be stripes, liquid crystals, pneumatic phases, and a super solid phase. I'm not going to mention that there. Okay? So, therefore, you may say that dipolar Fermi gas is a new many body system. We want to know what happens. Okay? So today will be very I will be very specific. Okay, I will consider dipolar fermions. So this is this arrows represented. They are sitting on a 2D lattice square with the x direction, y direction, and their dipole in a moment can be in any direction. Okay, this is the axis perpendicular to the plane. So the dipole induction can be labeled by this azimuthal, polar angle and azimuthal angle. Okay? Can be in energy.
It's a 2D system, but the dipoles are tilted. They're not perpendicular to the plane where they are. Yes.
They may perpendicular, they may have formed some angle. I use the theta and phi as some tuning parameter, which you can control using electric field. Okay. The thing I want to do is start from, a simple model Hamiltonian of this system and trying to figure out what is the phase diagram. Okay? And in doing so, I'm trying to present some evidences that there is one unusual quantum phase going to show up over here. That's not in this list I presented in the previous slide. Okay, with that long introduction, here's the outline. So I will just say a few words about the experiments as it's now, because we have an expert audience here. I will just be very, very fast and brief. Then I will consider a single component. If you want, you can call it a spinless. The single component dipolar fermion living on 2D lattice. And this phase, I promised, features something called the bound order, okay? And we'll say what that is, and when it's favored, when we're going to see that. And then if time permits, I'm going to generalize these results to two-component dipolar fermion, like the spin up and spin down, okay? And even on the, if I may have time to say a few words by Fermi gas with quadrupole moments in the end. Okay? So right now, for the polar molecules, we all know that the KRB is actually being made in its absolute ground state. Okay? We can confine them either, especially in this quasi-2D pancake geometry. This is done in JLab. And lately, I think last year, so they put the gas, load them onto the 2D and 3D lattices, optical lattices, and quite nicely they see they have a long lifetime to suppress these chemical reactions. So KRB already have lattices, okay? But the problem right now is not it's not exactly, it's still hot, or it's not exactly below quantum degeneracy. Okay? On the other hand side, they're not dipolar molecules, but atoms, these are the rare earth atoms with a big magnetic moment. So we're now talking about magnetic atoms. And this, in Ben Lev's lab, they actually cooled this fermionic isotope of dysprosium 161 below quantum degeneracy. Okay, just evaporate them after they trap them, and you can see as the number goes down, you know, the temperature goes down. You know, it's below one fermion, below the fermion range. We have degenerate gas. Okay, but they can do neither things because they have this bosonic isotope 162, which they previously made a BEC. Okay, then they can use this BEC to further sympathetic cool the 161, and here's the number, probably, that I will just quote. Temperature is roughly one quarter of the Fermi temperature. Okay, and the Fermi temperature, this is a continuum gas around 100 nanokelvin. So for the dysprosium, we definitely have quantum degeneracy, but no optical lattice yet. Okay, so now,
Interstate interaction between dysprosium atoms, individual dysprosium atoms, should be very, very small, right?
Right. So
another of 1 hertz or something like that, experimentally.
So you're talking about without a lattice.
If I put an atom here and a dysprosium atom in the neighboring side.
On the weak coupling limit, yeah.
Yeah. KRV is more quantum degenerate than you listed. That's an over number. So it's a lot closer.
Oh, yeah? Okay, good. Then we are in business. Thank you. Yes, so that's, they're making a case that, you know, you can get, you know, strongly, you know, intacting bosonic dysprosium BEC, but I don't know the detail about the fermions. Yeah, maybe you're right. Thank you.
I think that Lewis is right in a sense that if you look at dysprosium atom, this magnetic atom, then
yeah,
the magnetic moment of 10 Bohr magneton is equivalent to something like 0.1 debye.
Okay.
Therefore, the characteristic dipole-dipole distance, which we call R star, at which the dipole-dipole interaction manifests itself strongly, is about 400 angstroms or 300 angstroms, something like that. The typical lattice constant for optical lattice that people have experimentally is 250 nanometers, 2,500 angstroms. Therefore, what Lewis has in mind that for this type of lattice constant,
right,
the interaction between two dipoles in neighboring lattice sites is fairly small.
Yes. Yeah.
So, in case you wish to make this interaction large,
right,
the idea would be to replace this dysprosium atom by a polar molecule which has larger
You can either, you know, dump everything in the deep lattice, then the overall temperature scale is so tiny you have to really cool. Okay.
And KRV is still not great, right? It's about a quarter of the Debye maybe, so right, because they can't fully polarize. So actually probably already is the best to realize that if you really want to go long range for lithium cesium.
I see.
Which is very close now.
I see.
Yeah, so there should be posters on this during the conference.
Okay.
So it's probably
take a look at that.
For the sorts of things you're looking for.
Thank you. Okay. All right, this is our system once again. I already told you about this. And so the Hamiltonian is very, very simple. Okay, the probably the simplest Hamiltonian you can write out. The fermions, I will use A, the creation operator. So it hops from your size J to I, all right, this hopping amplitude I call T, okay? And if there one is in I side, the other on the J side, they interact with dipole-dipole interaction, and that's it. So to simplify things, I'm gonna confine myself to the limit of half filling. That means on average, I have one particle or one fermion every two sides, okay? And then also I will just mostly concentrate on the zero temperature and neglect you know, realistic issues like collapse instability, so on and so forth. Okay? Here's the system. Now, suppose just before, suppose the dipolar induction is not there, okay? So we only have this square lattice, fermion hopping, and half filling the Fermi surface is just a perfect square, okay? The numbers put it here, just later on I need to discretize my Fermi surface. So all the states inside square is occupied. Okay? The square is nice in the following sense. It has this property called perfect nesting. So there is a very nice wave vector pi pi I labeled all around here, equivalent to this, that couples all the states on this side of the Fermi circle to the other side. Okay? Now, turn on interaction. So this Fermi surface may become unstable. You get to something else. So the question I will ask is what kind of instability you have. Okay? So that of course depends on the interaction. To get an idea of the interaction, let's just take some examples. Sorry, I apologize for the color here. Because it decays, I will just pretend there is no further interaction. They are smaller. I will just take a look at the leading order ones. Okay, so these are, suppose I have a dipole over here, another dipole here, connected along the X bond, okay, nearest neighbor. I will call that interaction Vx. And also, I only following 20 minutes, I will only considering the dipole tilting along the X, okay? So for example, this is my dipole, I will tilt like this way, okay? So suppose you have two dipoles along the Y direction, Y bond, I'll call that Vy, okay? Immediately you know that Vx and Vy are not generally the same. And also two dipoles sitting on the opposite corner along the diagonal, I call that Vxy. Okay, let's just, for the sake of clarity, plot these three quantities as I continue to increase my tilt angle. Namely, I tilt my dipole from the perpendicular direction to the x-axis. So here, in the y direction, right? So no matter how you tilt, these two dipoles are always head-to-head, tail-to-tail. It's always repulsive, it's just flat, okay? At this scale, I just basically d square over a cube. A is the lattice spacing, which I will call Vd. That's the interaction scale. And the hopping scale is T. How about Vx? Well, you started from here, which is perpendicular, head-to-head, okay? It's positive. Now you tilt them down after some critical angle, which I'll call theta C1, become mostly head-to-tail, okay? Right? So it becomes negative. Okay, this is zero, it just becomes negative over here. Similarly for these two, okay? Vxy started out head-to-head, and then goes negative. There's another scale, another critical angle, which I call theta 2, okay? So this is how they change. And you look at that and you realize, well, I can do a great, good job guessing what's happening in two regions. One is this region, okay, to the left, small theta. Theta smaller than this. So in this region, you see three curves are positive, namely three kind of interactions are repulsive. On the other hand, large angles, okay, and of course this one is positive. Yeah, we cannot do anything about that. But this one is large and negative. Okay? So in this region, we can guess what's going on. Okay? The fermions basically hate each other. Okay? You put a particle here, and you don't want the second particle don't like these. Okay? They better go further apart. So what you end up with is a periodic modulation of your on-site density. And we'll call this density waves, charge density waves. If I borrow the literature, the condensed matter literature, okay? So if you look at this, you may say, I focus on the blue one, it's a checkerboard pattern, okay? And the long side density is just this average. In K-space, I mean, a lot of you already know.
Which filling factor you are considering now?
Sorry?
For charge density wave, which filling factor you are considering?
I have filling always. Throughout my talk, it will be half filling. Yeah. Okay? So this is just, remember that I said I turn on interaction, the Fermi's perfect square is unstable, okay? And this kind of instability associated with this kind of order is what we call it some part instability of the Fermi system is in the particle hole channel, okay? You can just naively think of this a particle as a hole, okay? And the checkerboard pattern, you know, you translate, you know, Fourier transform into the K-space, that's just the nesting vector. It's good vector connecting a lot of points. Okay? That's very easy. On the larger limit, large limit, okay? So Vx is attractive, okay? Whenever we have attractive interaction for fermions, we have the Cooper instability. Okay? But here, on the lattice is very wide, it's repulsive, so you cannot fully take advantage of this. So the system goes to pairing, but it develops something like a node. Okay? It does not two fermions in this direction, you know, on the, sitting along the y direction do not like each other. Okay? So they end up with this P-wave pairing that is this lattice analog of the P-wave pairing I showed you earlier for the continuum gas. So the order of all the parameter over here is instead of a particle and a hole, you have two particles, one sitting at I, the other one is x, its neighbor along the x direction. Okay? The P-wave would just say I have positive and then there's a, you know, negative. Over there, and there's no pairing along this bond, this goes to zero, it has this P-wave symmetry. And this kind of P-wave order, or I will call it the BCS, Barton-Cooper-Schrafer instability, is in the particle-hole, particle-particle channel, okay? Particle and hole, particle and particle.
But what is the symmetry of the order parameter? Is it Px symmetry?
Px, yeah. Yeah.
You know that there is a very well-known Anderson-Morel theorem that for superfluid pairing, the system picks up the ground state which fully gaps the Fermi surface.
Yeah.
And therefore, and here you are talking about
yes.
nodes and so on. So.
Yeah, but the same thing. The same thing. The paper you wrote says Px. No. This is not Px plus y py, right? So, well, just because
here in that paper, which you quote, Baranov et al., it's not Px pairing. It's a, in that case, Cooper pairs are superpositions of various types.
Yeah, exactly. So here is exactly the same story. So there is no definite, it has all the angular momentum, you know, it's actually a superposition of P, F, H, so on and so forth. Here, I'm just simplifying things. Okay, so, yeah. Okay, so this is just, you know, the pairing. Okay, we got these two limits, you know, pretty much we don't need to do anything, we just guess. How about what's happening here, okay? So between these two critical angles, okay? Well, this is a killer, okay? Vy is positive, Vx is negative, but not like it's here. So here, you know, this is 2 and this is 1, this guy gonna dominate. Here, okay, you compare these two curves, which is 1 and 1, they're comparable, but opposite sign, they compete, kind of.
So I have a question. So you assume half filling or?
Assume.
You assume some kind of uniformity of your system? You know?
Yes, yeah, I assume that also.
Okay.
Well, no, I take it back.
A lot of these long range, these long wavelengths.
This is not uniform, right? Spontaneously it breaks the translational symmetry. I allow that.
Okay.
Yeah, allow that. I don't enforce the thing. Uniform.
You still have one dipole per site. You require one dipole per site?
Half a dipole per site on average. I don't know where they are sitting. they will decide themselves.
So when you say BCS or charge density wave, this can be, this can have some kind of long wavelength modulation?
Yeah, the CDW, yes. The BCS, probably not, yeah.
Why not?
Because, you know, it's like, you know, it likes to be in a uniform state. Or we have to compare energetics, but, you know, I only give you an argument, waving my head, saying this is likely to be.
Yes.
We're going to show that later. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Okay. So this is the intermediate regime, okay? So we have opposite signs of the interaction. So what do the fermion do over here? So do they go to their neighbor saying, here I go BCS, sorry, here's the BCS, that there to CDW, or I don't do any of these? Or so that's the question that got me interested in.
Right, it's just, yeah. All your argumentation is based on nearest neighbors so far. So are you going to think about the component, or
so
the
here is
neighbor argument?
Yeah, so I'm simplifying things again. All my calculation later on will take into account all the range. Okay, yeah. No, it's fine.
More patience,
yeah, so it's hanging around here. I'll just pretend it's not there. Okay, but later on, all the calculation will take into that account. Here I'm just, you know, simplified picture. Well, you can think of three possible scenarios saying, well, you just the intermediate steps. As you increase the angle, it jumps from CDW to BCS, which is likely a first order quantum phase transition. Or there may be this so-called super solid scenario thing. Why don't we do both, okay? We have coexistence of density modulation plus pairing. But that will be a p-wave super solid, which is also interesting. The third scenario is maybe something completely different, okay? Okay, so we want to figure out what's happened over here, and I convince you that this is a problem basically of competing order, which is nothing new in condensed matter physics. But you know, you have to be careful with the kind of things you do, because in single mean field theory, simple mean field theory, basically we say that we assume such order exists, then we do calculations. And it's very hard to, you know, to decide by doing simple things that, you know, what the system will settle into. Okay? So basically, so to solve this problem, we need a theory or a tool that can treat all kinds of ordering instabilities, BCS, CDW, so on and so forth, on equal footing. We don't assume a priori that this is going to be the instability, okay? And there's a way to do that, okay? This is very little bit technical here, but I will try to explain the rough idea. So this is called the functional renormalization group method. So it concerns what kind of instability of your Fermi surface is. To do that, and of course happening at low energy scale, low temperatures, okay? Many body phases. To do that, we just artificially set a scale, say big lambda, and say, well, I separate the modes, okay? So some modes has low energy, okay? Slow modes, and there's high energy modes. You know, when you are out of this shaded region, away from the Fermi surface, okay? At each scale, there should be effective action or effective theory, all right? And that effective action is not going to be the bare theory, say, my two particles interacting with the bare dipole-dipole interaction. You really think I two my slow modes interacting with some very complicated stuff, which contains the contribution of the higher modes. They couple directly to the higher modes. The higher modes itself, they, you know, modify your self-energy, so on and so forth. So this effective interaction between the slow modes, I will not call VDD anymore, I will call the U, okay? And this U, depending on what scale you set. So numerically, is that you start from the bare interaction, which corresponds to a large are a scale which are on the bandwidth or Fermi energy scale, and then you progressively, you know, reduce the lambda by integrating out the high energy modes, then you end up with a U. In practice, it's actually, you know, this is essentially the renormalization group idea, and the functional part, you're just saying, I keep many, many of these interaction, effective interactions, okay? So
lambda is the RG scale, yes? This.
Yeah.
You call it lambda.
Yes, yes, it's our RG scale, yeah. Okay, so I will just skip the detail, just saying numerically for weak coupling problem, saying this VDD compared to T is smaller, okay? You can, you know, get a controlled theory by just truncating a lot of things. Okay, I'll just skip. And this is U, okay? We can think of all kinds of you know, interactions, and this is the two things that we mentioned, okay? So first of all, the BCS channel. The BCS channel, you can think of it pictorially, saying I have a fermion K1 comes in, there's another one, is minus K1, okay? This scatter, and the first one goes at K2, and this the fourth one is the K4, but since the momentum is conserved, once I know K2, this one is minus K2 also. This is the BCS channel. Okay, the CDW channel we mentioned is something like there. Say K1 coming in, K2 coming in, okay? The K1 got scattered by the dipole-dipole interaction. That renormalized dipole-dipole interaction goes to the opposite side of the Fermi surface. The momentum transfer is just this, nesting vector Q. Okay? And there are more, okay? The nice thing about this method is it keeps track of all the things, okay?
Is RG done assuming half filling or?
No.
No?
Yeah. It is the Fermi.
For any filling factor?
You can do this kind of RG, yes. Like half of the model away from half filling, people have done that.
I can tell you why I'm asking this question.
Yeah.
Because it's very well known,
yes,
that if the filling factor is small, yes.
Yeah.
Then your lattice system is nothing else than the gas phase.
Right.
In the gas phase, it is known that for tilted dipoles, there is a critical angle leading to the BCS superfluid pairing. This has been done.
Right.
But for the in the dilute regime, weakly interacting regime in the gas phase, nothing like CW.
Yes, yes. They're irrelevant in the gas phase, yeah. CDW.
So in the gas phase, it does not exist.
The CDW?
Yeah.
Well, the channel exists, the scattering exists. It just does not, is not the dominant instability.
It's not the ground state.
It's not the ground state, exactly. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. But I was told, by the way, I'm not a FRG expert. I don't want to pretend I am one. And so it can be, this method itself can be applied to other fillings. And one of the nice things maybe we, you know, people can do is invest in this gas phase again.
Didn't Shanwen Tsai do some of these calculations at Riverside?
Right, yeah. So she will show up in my final slide. Right. It's a collaborator, yeah. Okay? So it includes BCS channel, CDW channel, also their subtle interplay. Okay, that's why you know, it's coupled. Otherwise, we can just do one channel RG, which is much simpler than this. Okay, so how do we, you know, infer information by doing this numerical procedure? The idea is the following. So for each channel, okay, each channel you can see for this U depending on two parameters, K1 and K2. I discretize my Fermi surface, say I have 32 K1s, 32 K2s, this is essentially a 32 by 32 matrix, okay? And then I trace the flow of this guy and monitor its eigenvalues. If I see one of the eigenvalues, you know, it just shoots up, it's much, it's, you know, most diverging, okay? That's, you know, that's that tells that this is the most dominant instability. Furthermore, from the eigenfunction, okay, you can, you know, pull out the orbital symmetry, the, how this, you know, your incipient order or instability, how depending on your k, okay? So I have two things, eigenvalues and eigenvectors. Okay, so let's just, you know, apply this to our problem, okay? So here the first row is for a small angle, okay, 30 degrees. This is the intermediate angle, and this is a large angle. For the small angle, I have two curves. This is the eigenvalue, and this is the eigenvector. Well, the blue color is the CDRW channel, the eigenvalues. And this is the BCS channel, okay? You see, well, as you do the RG steps, okay? So this guy goes up, and this is the log scale, okay? This guy really shoots up, all right? So this is the leading instability, okay? And if I plot the eigenvector of this, it is as a function around the Fermi surface, so this axis over here is really this angle. I go from zero, half pi, pi, so as we go around the Fermi, it just stays flat, okay? So this S wave, okay, it does not change sign, it does not modulate. And on the large angle side, so we do have a CDW instability as we wave our hand, okay? On the other hand, you have the BCS channel. Sorry, the large angle, you see the BCS channel shoots up faster, okay, most diverging. And the, lo and behold, the plot is eigenvector, it has a pure wave symmetry, okay? In this angle, you have plus, plus, and you reflect it, you have minus and minus. So it's a little bit unintuitive to with this plot, but trust me, this is pure wave. Okay?
And this is some feeling.
A feeling, yes. Yeah, yeah. So basically, feeling determines your shape of the Fermi surface. We assume perfect Schrödinger surface, and we are allowed to throw away the self-energy corrections, and that's why it, we maintain these results for Hafele. Okay, so now, in the intermediate state, you see something else. Yes?
It looks like these orderings are maybe not monotonic in the RG step, right? In the top
curve,
the pink points up again, the same.
Yes, they're very complicated, yeah.
How do you tell that it's completely converged, that you've really found dominant?
Yeah, that's a very good question. For example, this guy, you see this work goes up, but it's always following that, all right? But this guy may turn up, but, you know, it's never going to, you know, exceed this guy. And also, technically, this, as you go the RG step, you go out to tiny, tiny energy scales, which we are never access that. We just physically you can cut off somewhere. It's determined by the physics. Right? So in this limit, we have a funny combination, okay? CDW channel, the CDW instability is most divergent, but its orbital symmetry, like this one, is P wave. So if you want to jump, you say P wave CDW. My only animation here. So what is this? Okay. It took us a little bit a while to figure it out. And so we transform into real space. So the P wave instability in this CDW channel actually corresponds to a spatial modulation of something. This something is not density, it's a bound variable, okay? Precisely what I mean by that is the hopping, okay? You take a fermion to here and just hop to I plus Y, hop to the nearest neighbor in the Y direction, and take the average, okay? And for each bond, okay, you calculate this number. In real space, you get a pattern like this, okay? Corresponding to this P wave instability. You say, well, my hopping over here, hopping average is bigger, a little bit bigger, smaller, bigger, smaller. Move to the other one, you have bigger, smaller, bigger, smaller. And the x direction is the same, okay? the same color. So if you step back and you see, this is roughly a checkerboard pattern of the bonds, not the on-site density. Okay? Why do we have this? Why do the system, you know, just forego the Fermi surface and trying to, you know, settle into such a pattern? Well, one way to think about it is this, just like Peter Zoller just talked about a little bit ago, is the effect of correlated hopping induced by dipole-dipole interactions. And the simpler picture is this. And by the way, this is all the hinder side, okay? After we got this, you know, think about mean field theory. So density-density interaction is NINJ, or if you rearrange these operators a little bit, AI, AG, AG, II, okay? You know, four operators. I do mean field decoupling. I just pretend the second term I will call just replace it by the its average. That's like the Bogoliubov theory, okay? And I introduce rho ij is this this hopping.
Yeah. I don't understand why you don't just start, if you want to make this kind of argument. I don't understand why you don't start with all your four operator terms when you figure continuum Hamiltonian, discretize it, put it in the lattice, and now you get lots of four operator terms, and you've thrown a lot of them out by writing out a simple model in the first place, but you haven't shown that those other four operator terms don't matter. I mean, generally, this interaction-assisted tunneling would be very significant and totally change your picture. So if you're making an argument like this for me to believe it, I would have to see, just, you know, imagine I was refereeing your paper. This is what I would write, okay? I'm not your referee, but suppose I was, right? I mean, I would ask you to rank the different four operator terms, you know,
I agree with you.
Frequency or energy scale, tell me which ones were important.
Yeah. So let me just step back.
I don't think there's any problem with your functional renormalization group to include those other four operator terms, right? As far as I understand, it's a pretty general method.
Yes. So let me just step back. So before claim, this is what you see.
The terms that you threw out, it's very strange, you know, with your mean field argument. That was like recreating the very terms you threw out when you wrote down that model.
Right. Well, it's not exactly like that. But let me just step and say, I'm not claiming this is going to be C. You're going to see this, you know, say, dump dysprosium or KRB on optic lattice. I'm just saying that this will happen for this Hamiltonian. Okay. All right, so of course, okay, you might say in real optical lattice, you throw away some further hopping, and so there may be, you are not allowed to do the single band approximation. You start from field operators, you expand it, you get a bunch of new terms. I fully agree with you. That's a big issue that we have to look into. So far, let me just step one back there. This is, I'm analyzing a simplified Hamiltonian.
You can just calculate the overlaps to tell you the, just to say you can answer that question in your work, you can calculate the overlaps and figure out the relative contribution of those terms.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. Yes. So, the reason I'm doing this, trying to, you know, I can never do this, okay, for operator, I cannot do. I want to reduce it, guided by this, this result from FRG, just reconstruct from simple mean field what's happening and answer why this is, this modulation save energy, okay. Okay, so this is a standard mean field procedure, but the nice thing that you only have this AIAG left, okay. And then you, you know, take this hopping pattern over there, saying this is why I call chi x, and this is why chi y plus theta minus theta. Theta is the bound modulation, your order parameter. If y is zero, then, you know, you don't have this. Sorry, theta is zero, you don't have this. Okay, after, you know, now you have a quadratic Hamiltonian, and you can solve it in 5 minutes. And, well, first thing you realize that, well, now the Fermi surface is gapped out, right? It's just like a superconductivity. You gap out, you push your spectrum downwards, you do save some energy. You can, you know, further compute this ground state energy. You're going to see a bunch of terms over here, but eventually there's something like this. Minus Vy is the interaction in the y direction, which is, remember, is always positive, it's a constant, and delta squared. Okay? So the energy saving mechanism basically is a repulsion in the y direction. Okay? So it's a little bit reminiscent to this 1D pairs instability, but we don't have phonons and so forth. Okay? So for this, VY is always positive, it's energetically good to develop a delta. Okay? Which gives you a lot of negative contribution. But this is just some mean field. Okay. So now we did, I just put, give you 3 points of data, but you can do this, scan the parameter space. And here's the so-called phase diagram. Once again, we're talking about half filling and tilting the x direction. And basically, you can neglect this axis and just focus on this axis. Okay, that's when this is the perpendicular direction, and tilt until it goes in the in-plane direction. You basically have three phases. And this phase, because it has the bound modulation, I would call it bound order solid. Okay. So this is sandwiched just like the algorithm a little bit earlier between the BCS and the CDW phase. Okay?
Sorry, why is that period two necessarily? So your bond order solid has a modulation, which is that
good point.
You somehow have nearest neighbor again creeping back into your problem?
Because the system has perfect nesting, it's always like a checkerboard. When you have a checkerboard pattern, you have this, you take advantage of this nesting vector, like this one, right? This one also. You want your double unit cell in both the x direction and the y direction.
Never period 4, never period 6, never period 8, or did your calculational method leave
out? Well, so the Jim Friedrichs, the group at Georgetown, they are doing extensive large-scale simulations of the CDW phase at where the dipoles are perpendicular to the plane. They do find there are more complicated CDWs.
So why not the same for bond order solid?
But once again, they are doing mean field over there. Okay, why you don't see like more complicated? Well, I don't have an answer. It just turns out to be the case.
Well, you don't think it's something inherent in your method? I'm still suspicious about that from early on.
Yeah, you're justified. So
the stuff developed by Shannon, I guess you're using now. I don't know if you've developed it further. Is there something in your code that assumes that only allows you to develop nearest neighbor based phases?
Yeah, I can safely say the following. The application of this method is on the same level being applied to Hubbard model, 2D Hubbard model at half filling. So, and which has extensive literature on this. That's more complicated because you have two spins. We only have one spin over here.
Did you check this? And you can at least check for, well, you couldn't get it, I guess. I was thinking you could do somehow a 1D and do a couple of legs on a ladder and use
right.
The MRG methods, but it won't help you because it won't answer the longer range question.
Yeah, but I secretly hope that somebody can do that calculation, calculate the correlation functions. So in a minute I'll show some exact diagonalization data.
But if you have high feeling,
yes.
I would say that you cannot have this more symmetric than this one, right? If you are half-filling, you have fermions, you cannot have more separation than that, right? Because he is at half-filling. Mm-hmm. Because if you are at lower filling, you could have all these type of David's staircases that you have.
So you think it's just from the filling assumption? Yeah.
Because he is having half-filling, so he cannot have one thing. One question.
Yeah.
Is what you call bond order?
Yes.
Is, in the language of spins, is dimers. It's dimerization, right?
Yes.
It's singlets, right?
Yes.
Singlets.
It's very like this so-called valence bond crystal, but in the strong coupling limit. We are doing weak coupling. Okay. So I firmly believe there's a connection over there.
Okay.
because if you strongly couple the limit, you can, you know, get out the effective spin model. You will see Vx, Vy becomes Gx, Jy is frustrated, square lattice, it's going to be some G1, G2 Heisenberg model, oh no, sorry, maybe Ising or Heisenberg model, and we haven't explored that.
The role of the dipole-dipole interaction in your case is that there is a dipole-dipole interaction with the nearest neighbor, next to nearest neighbor, and so on.
Right.
This is the only thing I can understand here. Is that correct, what I'm thinking?
That's correct.
If you have a short-range interaction, it's just on site.
Yes.
Period. If you have dipole-dipole interaction, that is an interaction with nearest neighbors, next to nearest neighbors, and so on.
Yes. Yeah.
And you make a summation up to an infinite number of neighbors or something.
Yeah. So we do have some high momentum cutoff that, but which is ridiculously large. So you can say safely that we took them all into account.
Yeah. This I do not understand. The necessity of this high momentum cutoff. I think it should be eliminated automatically because of the angle. If all dipoles look in one and the same direction, there is unity minus cosine squared theta angle between them. Yes?
Okay.
And therefore, if this factor were absent, then the integral at large distances is divergent in 3D. It's d3r divided by r cubed dr dr. Uh-huh. So therefore, there is a logarithmic divergence, and you have to introduce a high cutoff or something. Yes, also at low distances.
Is that also true for 2D?
For 2D, no. For 2D, it's not the case. But for 2D, there is a renormalization procedure. For a small filling factor that you are having, yes, there is a renormalization procedure which allows one to get rid of high momenta. You have a divergence at high momenta or?
Oh, low momenta. I'm just saying that, you know, I misspoke, yeah. So what I'm trying to say is that you have further interactions, and that, you know, we're doing things in momentum space. And I'm pretty sure that we go, you know, these are all taken into account.
Yeah. Yes, but what I'm asking is, in whatever space you work, momentum space or coordinate space, it does not matter. Do you have a divergence at large momenta or small momenta?
So once again, we're not talking about the gas. So, you know, small momenta, large momenta, you know, it's probably, you should say that all the things happening on the Fermi surface, okay? So the instability happens when, say that, you know, the K1 and the K2. So if you measure the momentum with respect to the Fermi, the small K limit.
Saying small K relative momentum of the Fermi.
Yeah, if it's a gas space, you have tiny little Fermi.
Doesn't matter whether you are in a lattice or in the gas phase. If you write down correctly the gap equation, then you see exactly that in a trivial gap equation, that's what people who did not read Landau-Lipschitz you have a divergence at large momenta and so on.
Oh, the regular, yeah.
What you should do, in order to get rid of this divergence, you have to turn to the so-called renormalized gap equation.
Got it.
Where the Fourier transform of the interaction is replaced by the off-shell scattering amplitude. Yes, and then this divergence is absent, it's superficial. Therefore, that's how it goes, and it doesn't matter whether I'm in phase.
I got it. So this is not what we do here. So that's solving gap equation, figure out how much the other parameter is, self-consistently. Here, just instability analysis, that's it. So, but we should do what you told, you just said. For example, the BCS space. Okay, so I think, okay, now the last thing I want to mention. So we also allow the dipole to tilt in not only the x direction, but in any azimuthal angle, okay? So here is the polar angle, tilting from, say, 90 degrees into the plane. And here is the azimuthal angle. It's, so when this angle goes from 0 to 45 degrees, I basically tilting my dipole, say, from here to the diagonal direction, all right? So here's the phase diagram using the FRD analysis. Well, we saw this before, this vertical line before, as you tune to the, you know, the diagonal azimuthal angle, this phase just shrinks. It should be, because at this, if you're dipole in this direction, x and y, they are symmetric, okay? The modulation cannot be just in the x anymore. It should go away. I would just mention that something funny going on over here in the green shaded region. I will not go into the details. If you want to see more, our paper is already published. And basically here you have density modulation, but density modulation becomes weaker and weaker, and gradually there is some bound modulation that's growing, but this bound modulation is really funny in the diagonal direction. So, thinking should, how much time? Okay.
Well, we've been fairly open at these for discussion, so how much more do you have?
About 5 to 10 minutes, I'll just wrap up.
Oh,
okay.
A lot of interruptions.
Yeah, it's good to finish at 1:45 so people can have a little bit of a break.
Okay, good. That would be very. So here's just saying, well, we have this so-called bound ordered phase at intermediate dipole tilting angles. Okay? And to see this, of course, you need the lattice, half filling, and we hope that, you know, if you dope it away, you still can see it. But so the question is more relevant to, you know, observing this. It's, you know, how strong is the modulation, and you know, where is the optimal point, that the sweet point that we should look at it? Well, according to the mean field theory. And just I sketched before, I mean, it's like a BCS, okay? So all the parameter just goes up very rapidly. But as in this BCS-BC crossover problem, we know this cannot be physical, all right? So this is the dipole interaction increasing. And once it's beyond, say, V is larger than T, this is not reliable anymore. But just to get some rough idea, we took, you know, the final lattice and just diagonalize it and compute the the bound hopping correlation function. And so this correlation function, if you this bond and that bond, if these two bonds are, you know, separation goes to infinite, it should appear, you know, should approach as 4 times delta square. Okay, 4 just the way I write it down. Okay, so from this exact diagonalization result, which is a very small lattice, it seems that it's like this TC curve of your BCS-BC crossover, okay? So it's so V roughly is twice 2.5 T. That's probably the good point where the you have a bigger gap, strong modulations, and hence high TC, okay? So if you want a number, the mean field gap is, which is overestimating the gap, is, you know, like a quarter of the hopping or 5% of EF, which is right now, you know, which is small, but not hopelessly small.
Okay.
So in the remaining 5 minutes, I will just just flash you a generalization of this. So we consider dipolar fermion sitting on the lattice and also with two spin components. And I will not go into any of the details, but you have the dipole-dipole interaction over here, but also now you have spin up and spin down. They can come to the same side. There's the Hubbard interaction U, okay? So
the dipole interaction is the same.
Yeah, so dipole interaction will contribute on-site term, which I dump into the U.
So the interdipole interaction between sigma and sigma prime is the same.
Oh, yeah. So, yes. Sorry. Yes, so the N and N, I just, you put this sum over there, you will see N up, N down, N up, N up, they are the same dipole interaction. I was just thinking about different hyperfine states of the atom, more rotational levels of the molecule. Okay, you can define the, you know, how many numbers, the charge, or how many total number of atoms on the site, or the spin, okay? And then you realize, well, this problem, you can once again, control it. Artificially, you take some limit. Suppose U is so small, okay, forget it, okay? I only have T and V, so this is just twice the problem that we dealt with a moment ago, okay? On the other hand side, you can consider a limit. U is large, throw away the dipole interaction. Oh, this is just, once again, it's a model. I'm not saying dysprosium or KRB will do this. It's just a model. Okay? If a large U model, large U limited, you know, throw away this term, you end up with Hubbard model. Half filling, you have anti-Fermat phase. It's a spin density wave. I call it a spin density wave instead of near order because I'm considering weak coupling. U is smaller than T. Okay, so it's upspin, downspin, upspin, downspin, it's checkable. Okay. On the other hand, suppose dipolar interaction is so large, I neglect this term, and also I suppose all the dipoles in the perpendicular direction, okay, which you end up is just, once again, you know, density waves, okay? Yeah. Up and down spins can go to the same side, so this guy modulates. More atom, less atom, more atom, less atom. And once again, you have the similar, you know, situation. How about dipolar interaction dominating in the intermediate angle? You crank up the same calculation, you will see, well, the leading instability is now in this spin density wave channel, but it's P wave. Okay, you end up with P wave, spin density wave. Okay, and once again, what is being modulated is some variable living on the bounds, not on the sides. But it's, by the way, the arrows here is not the dipoles; it's just the spin. Okay, so it's some spin operator. A spin vector. Okay, it's some vector in spin space defined like this. This hopping. For example, you can have hopping up plus down. Up becomes down, or up remaining up. Okay? So, if I don't have time, I would just, just claim there's some such thing. We map out the phase diagram in these regions. Once again, this is funny P wave, spin density wave. Happens along these regions, and here you have the usual CDW. Here is once again BCS, and this is the CDW that you know from the Hubbard model. And of course, the details depend on relative ratio of the V and the U, so on and so forth. Okay, so to wrap it up, so what is the big picture here? So we have so-called P wave CDW, we claim there is a possibility or evidence. I present some evidence this will be realized in dipolar Fermi gas, and also the P wave spin density wave. What are these? Okay? Are they loud? You know, is there B wave CDW, D wave SDW, so on and so forth? And it turns out actually, more than 12 years ago, Chita Nayak, which is, I believe, is a resident here, he wrote this very nice paper. I think it's ahead of its time. It's called Density Wave Says of Non-Zero Angular Momentum. And he made this nice argument, which I think is so nice that I have to say something about. So we all know about superconductors. Superconductor, we call it a condensate of Cooper pairs. Okay, this is all the parameter. You have two field operators, and one is K, one is minus K. You know, there are some spin states, alpha or beta. Well, we can classify it to spin singulated pairing or triplet pairing, okay? Singulated pairing, this is the spin, you know, spin this up, this gonna have to be down, all right? And the other parameter is some scalar function of K. K is the momentum, okay? Similarly, for the triplet superconductors, your other parameter, okay, is a vector. This is in boldface. Okay. Fermi statistics require that for singlet superconductor, your angular momentum, the relative angular momentum of the pair has to be like even, 0, 2, 4, so on. And likewise, for triplet, you have to be 1, 3, so on and so forth. So according to this classification regime, you know, we can, you know, put all the superconductor we know into the into this you know, long list for it. Aluminum, niobium, S-wave, singlet, L equal to 0, angular momentum, which is the conventional superconductor. But zircon, ruthenite, copper oxides, they are the triplet P-wave and the singlet D-wave superconductor. You can go around. I think most of you are familiar with this. Okay, so these guys with finite angular momentum, we call unconventional superconductors. And Nayak says the following. Say, what about the density waves? I don't have a particle-particle, I have a particle and a hole there. Okay? But I can do very similar things. I can think of these density waves as a condensate of not particle-particle, but particle-hole pairs. Okay, the theory goes through roughly the same. Okay? And you can think of this, oh sorry. I might miss this, probably this is plus K, okay, sorry about that. So you can think of like very similar to this, have like singlet, saying that you know up, up or down, down, okay? This is the chronic delta. And then you know, all the parameter of this density wave is just some scalar function of a function of K. Okay? And if K is, say, if the continuum limit is isotropic, this is S wave, it corresponds to L equal to 1 is P wave and D wave, so on and so forth. And similarly, you can, this is the charge density waves, you can do this for spin density wave and have this. Okay, and S wave CDW is nothing but the checkerboard modulation pattern we saw. S wave SCW is just the near order we saw. Okay, the D wave CDW actually got a special name, D density wave. People discuss this in the context of high temperature superconductors, trying to understand this so-called pseudo phase. And very nicely, I think, is that these two now find their life in dipolar Fermi gases. But if our calculation is indicative. And with that, I will just go to conclusion. I'll skip about the quadruple moments. And here's the collaboration team. We have a lot of people working at this. Sitting's postdoc at GMU and now moving to JQI, and Ludwig and Shenwen are really the RG experts. We learned a lot from them. And our code is actually based on their original code they wrote on Fermi Bose mixture on triangular lattice. We just modify that, okay? And this thing we're gonna work with Charles. And I didn't have time to talk about the quadrupolar, but if you are interested, this is already on archive too. Okay, thank you so much.
Charles Clark is together with the American flag. What does it mean?
He won some award, gold medal, silver medal from the government, which Paul, I think, also won. Yeah, so this is a picture probably They are all government employees.
So how about questions from someone other than Jor or myself, since we interrupted a lot. So Luis, Paul, Luis, you want to start?
Yes, I understand that I shouldn't ask questions.
No, it's okay. You can ask. Luis is alive to be Go ahead, Luis, yeah.
So, concerning the question about the mapping to spin-off, it seems to me that if you have single performance systems in a single band,
you
can map operation into spin basically always.
Right, yes. So either you have one particle or no particle.
No particle or particle. Therefore, this mapping into spin is valid as long as you assume that you remain in the lowest band and so on.
Yeah.
So I can make this mapping into spins, and then what you are getting there is a balanced bond solid, basically, what you call the bond order. It's a balanced bond
solid. Maybe we should be investigating. I think so. So the one thing that I thought about this, but not sure. Sorry, I have to. Yeah. So the traditionally, like valence bond solid, right? They define their bound bound variable as say whether you have a singlet or not. Right. The singlet will be like up, down, minus, down, up. And what is the precise meaning of this this minus sign over there? I have to think about it. Maybe that will work out too. Sorry. But I believe it will be something like a bond of spins.
Following a similar question, the two component case, now it resembles a high spin free half system, basically, in this system, right?
They
have zero, up, down, and up, down, to say, basically, these three.
Yes.
So you can map it into a sort of spin free half just high spin system.
Sorry, isn't that a four?
Because you have
up,
zero.
Okay.
You're saying the four states doesn't.
Got it.
Did you check to see if spin commutator relations hold those four states?
I don't know. It seems dimension of the Hilbert space is correct. But the commutator, probably you can do some funny combination and it work out. Yeah.
There will be some residual time too.
Okay.
Why not be spin free half? Paul, is that
right? Yeah, well, it's maybe more in the nature of an open discussion topic than a question per se. I don't know if we have time to explore it here, but what are the things that these are formal models giving equilibrium, zero temperature equilibrium properties of phases or ensembles of dipoles. So what I'm interested in is what are the prospects, what's really needed with real molecular systems that one might get in the laboratory? In other words, what kind of conditions does one need to reach to get to achieve these? And so like how might we actually think about doing that? And secondly, if you actually can achieve these phases, how will they be detected? So to some extent, I think a workshop like this should be exploring those kind of topics and should be, maybe that's an open discussion for later in the week or at some other point. But basically, of the molecules we have or possibly might get over the next 2 to 5 years in the laboratory, where do the experimentalists need to be going to see these kind of phenomena?
Well, you have a slide with some, you can say it's the most robust dipole-dipole interaction was 2.5 times T.
Yeah.
Well, what's T like? Yeah. 10 hertz? I mean, you know, what's a realistic number of realistic molecules, and what does that mean in terms of temperature and lattice capacity?
T is going to be kilohertz,
ballparks.
Yes, no? It's a clipping amplitude.
Is that right?
100 hertz.
100 hertz, too high?
100 hertz, okay. 100 hertz, okay.
And so, actually, we have a paper now with all of these numbers calculated for the different molecules that are up and coming. And Michael, maybe you know the numbers off the top of your head. I don't know, the others you can pull the paper out, but do you remember which molecule that's probably equivalent to the nearest neighbor? Density, the direct interaction. So lithium, cesium?
Yeah, it would be something.
That's big, right? I don't think ARB will do that.
I see.
So you need one of these molecules with a larger dipole. And you can check our paper for actually some precise numbers. It's up on the archive now.
Okay.
But is it for sure that T is only 100 hertz? Cannot it be larger? Yes, well, 1 kilohertz is easier.
But then,
not easier.
Yeah, the lighter molecules tend to have smaller dipole moments too. fact, that's all sort of correlated.
Yeah, we'll also need to check the single band approximation. If you have a shallow lattice, you know, bigger T.
You guys are worried about single band, but did you understand what comment I made earlier?
Yes. Yeah.
Because I think you should check your
you guys are working on that,
right?
You guys are working on that, right? So it's multi-band models for this. It will be very, very interesting to look at the results. Yeah.
I would say this naively that for a molecule where the mass is relatively large, T should be rather small. And also because if you have to work in the single band approximation, I mean, really, kilohertz is like a lot, so to say. It should be something much smaller than recoil and something. So I would expect that the typical T is of the order of tens of hertz. Tens, not hundreds.
He speaks about the shallow optical lattice.
So I'm just trying to boost the
order. And the VD can be 2.5 T, it depends on how big is T, because VD does not depend so much on the lattice depth. It depends, but it depends indirectly.
But again, we just calculate these numbers in our preprint for all the different molecules.
What I mean is that T depends on the lattice, whereas VD depends on the lattice spacing, right, more than on the lattice depth.
It depends also on the polarization of the optical lattice.
Yes, but what I mean is that this particular relation VD, the 2.5 T depends on the lattice depth, whereas VD depends roughly more on the
distance. Yeah.
I think you can play a game with internal states as well. If when he wants to set up a two-state problem, he can say which two states he's using. If we're talking to answer Paul's question about heteronuclear molecules, they have a lot of internal states to play with, and they may see very different lattices depending on the internal state. So, yeah. And the polarization of the lattice.
Lincoln.
Yeah.
I have a question to you. Will you allow me to ask one question?
Oh, yeah. It was uncomfortable.
Thank you.
I didn't mean for you not to. I just wanted other people to ask things first, please.
Yeah.
You showed us the phase diagram for some feeling.
Yeah.
Where, for dipoles perpendicular to the plane, I think that CDW phase was the ground state in your case.
Yeah.
Am I right? There was a phase diagram somewhere.
Yes, yeah. This one.
I think so. Yeah. DM, what it means is that you have the CDW, yes, for perpendicular dipoles, for half filling. For small filling factor, it's clear that it's just a Fermi liquid.
Yes.
No strike phase, no nothing. That was a theory.
That's established result?
Yes, of course. It has been established by myself.
I need to read your papers.
I can tell you.
That's nice.
Just a second. No. This is for the small filling factor, which is equivalent to the gas phase, not for half filling.
Mm-hmm.
For small filling factor. Yes. Then what we have done, we have constructed many body theory a la Abrikosov-Kolatnikov for the dipolar system. And in a later stage, Stefano Giorgini and Natalia Matveeva in Trento, they have done Monte Carlo calculations.
I see.
And all these speculations about the strike phase for perpendicular dipoles, they have been eliminated. For tilted dipoles, there is still a question.
I see.
Then, if this is true, what you are saying about half filling, for the gas phase or small filling, I know the answer. It means that when I increase the filling factor from small values to half filling, there should be a quantum phase transition.
Right, right.
If your RG that you are doing, RG scale that you have selected is quite nice, allows you to work also to develop your RG not only for half filling, but for a smaller filling factor, it means that you should be able to pick up a quantum phase transition.
Okay, good.
That's
good.
What I'm saying.
Ah, thank you. Thank you. Yes. Yeah. We all wanted to go beyond the half filling because it's like the anti-paramagnet or Hubbard model. Right? You dope it, just you tilt down, you just completely kill doping.
Yes. So,
and that's the problem.
Therefore,
the scenario.
For a small filling factor, you have to find this Fermi liquid phase, just ordinary one.
Yeah, yeah.
But then, if this is all true, what you are saying, yes, because I don't know details of the calculations and so on, there should be a quantum transition.
Yes.
The CDW phase.
Yes.
That's what I would say.
Okay.
Thank you.
I agree.
Yeah.
Could you detect phase separation with this method? It looks like you always predict like multi-critical points and.
Yes. Good that you didn't show that the graph. Yes. Phase separation should be tricky. Yeah.
I mean, presumably it would be that the curves are exactly parallel, yeah. Right? They have the same order of divergence.
Yeah. So the susceptibility maybe you know has the information in some scattering effective interaction, but we haven't looked at it. So one kind of micro phase separation is like the stripes, right? Which has a pi zero wave vector, and that's because we already have the perfect square. That's not that's not going to save energy too much. But yeah, I don't know the answer, but if we can do it, that would be nice. Yeah.
If anybody wants to go to the conference, it starts in 5 minutes, so I think we should probably bring this to a close. So. We had, since all the new members weren't here, we decided we'd do the introductions tomorrow.
So
before Axel's talk.
Everybody should be sure to come there.
Everybody show up tomorrow and we'll introduce all of our new members.
Let's thank our high.